Welcome to the golf edition of Hooked on Sport. This is South Australia's summer golf wrap, where we uncover the stories, personalities and moments that define golf across South Australia and beyond. It's time to talk golf with sports commentator Ben Hook and state golf representative Sophie Hilditch.
Thanks, Wallace. Good on you, mate. Hello, everyone. Hello, Sophie. Happy Australia Day to you. Of course, it's been an incredibly hot day. I spent most of it getting around in my Australian flag mankini. What about you?
Well, I wasn't quite doing that. I did all my celebrations on the Triple J Top 100, which was on Saturday. So I'm celebrated out from listening to some amazing music. So today was spent recovering on the couch.
I did have a little bit of Triple M going today, but my three-year-old daughter overruled me and ended up with Wiggles, which is still Australian music, I suppose. But we've been eating apples and bananas and eeples and beninis and all of the associated phrases, a little bit of rockabye your bear. So that was about as Australia Day as I got. Incredibly hot. Did you, I don't know, get out of the golf course or you're not that silly?
No, I was on a golf sim though, so I'm still silly, but I was side with a lovely air conditioner playing 18 holes at the Old Head Golf Course over in Ireland. So I was having a lovely day touring around the country. The world. It wasn't good, that's all I'll say. I think I shot two over for 18 holes, but I can't chip to save myself on a golf sim. It's shocking.
Putting's a bit difficult as well, I reckon.
Well, I just put the auto putt on. I just ignore that bit.
Oh, but you are a genius putter. You're probably costing yourself five shots. I reckon you shot six under. You would have made eight bombs.
I will say I do find myself yelling at the golf sim saying there's absolutely no way that was a two putt. It was a one putt all the way.
Talking about bombs before we get into it, Soph, the Adelaide Giants have won their third Australian Baseball League title in 4 years. They did it against the Sydney Blue Sox last night. They won the best of three series 2-1, had a 6-2 victory, double play to finish it off. Look, we are not experts in baseball, but another incredible performance by a South Australian team. Underdogs going over there to Sydney to take on the Blue Sox, who'd been the dominant team for the year. What an incredible result.
Yeah, an absolutely amazing result. I actually find it quite funny timing. My parents are doing some cleaning out at the moment, and my dad's just found a massive basket of old school things. Turns out my dad was quite a good baseballer back in the day, and he's got about 10 baseball trophies hanging around. He's just kept that quietly to himself.
My father played a lot of baseball. You see, back in the day, baseball was a winter sport and cricket was a summer sport. And a lot of the cricketers played baseball in the winter. And of course, now they're both summer sports and that becomes extraordinarily difficult. But yeah, my father, very handy schoolboy baseballer, a little bit. We're almost kindred spirits. Our dads were handy baseballers and we didn't really know it.
No, I had absolutely no idea. I'm getting sent photos of his glory days playing baseball.
I tell you what I had no idea about, Soph. That is what it takes to get into the Augusta National Women's Amateur. Reagan Denton, your good mate, Royal Adelaide teammate of yours, has officially done it. She has revealed the official invite she's received from Chairman Fred Ridley. She'll be heading to Augusta National to play Anwar the week before the tournament. It's a fascinating setup. I'll get you to describe how it all works. But first of all, just a reaction to the news that Reagan Denton is off to Anwar.
Well, I have completely two mixed emotions. One, I'm completely jealous. I'm so envious of her position. I would absolutely love to go and play Augusta, but wow, am I so proud of Reagan. There's only been a handful of Australians that have been invited to this event, and I can tell you it's an amazing list of Australians that have been invited to this event. They include Grace Kim, Christian Rudgley, Justice Bozzio, Madison Hinson-Tolchard, Sarah Hammett, and Jennifer Wong. And it's an incredible list of amateurs of Australians, and Reagan, I'm so proud of her. It's incredible. I know she was hoping to get this invite. She was talking to us about it only back in November, December. So when I saw that Instagram post, I was absolutely astounded, but I'm not at all surprised. Her golfing has been incredible over the last few weeks.
Great list of past winners as well. First ever winner was Jennifer Kupcho, 2019. Rose Zhang won it in 2023. Lottie Woad, someone that we've talked about in this podcast in the past, so won it in 2024. So Reagan, I would argue, probably a decent shot to join some absolute elites of the amateur slash moving into the professional game.
Yeah, 100%. There's been some incredible players, full stop, not just even winners, like Mayer Stark, Lynn Grant. So many LPGA players have used this as kind of like a leapboard into their professional careers. You can see that all the past winners, apart from the young ones like Anna Davis, who I think she was only 15 maybe when she won the event, have basically gone and straight away and gone on to do their professional careers. You mentioned Jennifer Kupcho. It actually is astounding if you go onto YouTube and watch the 2019 Anwar, which was the first ever Anwar, and it was a battle out between her and Maria Fassi. They were absolutely miles ahead of the rest of the field, so it was kind of almost like match play. But it gives me chills watching those two girls battle it out in 2019, because the sportsmanship that was displayed by both of them was incredible. Jennifer Kupcho actually got a migraine halfway through the round and was relying heavily on her caddy to read putts. And you could see that Maria Fassi was actually completely worried about her the whole time she was struggling. But then you could just see the girls were just so excited to be at Augusta National, to be playing in front of those patrons, to have that theme music playing in the background whilst it's being televised. So it just sends chills through my body. It's an amazing event, and I cannot wait to see Reagan hit it up there.
Take us through how it works. 72 start Wednesday and Thursday. Play a couple of different courses. Everyone gets a practice round on the Friday and then the finale on the Saturday. So just explain your best understanding of how it works.
Yeah, so you're dead right. It's a 72-player international field. There's a cut after 36 holes. The first two rounds are played at the Champions Retreat Golf Club, which is probably actually the hardest of the two courses that they play. It's a very long golf course, and there's often a playoff for the top 32, which is what the cut will be. They then go on to that Saturday. Every single of those 72 players gets to play a practice round at Augusta and get to experience the course. But then from there, the final day is on that Sunday, and it will be a battle out for those 32 girls, and it's astounding. It's actually incredible. I love watching the girls play Augusta. You often get on your high horse and rant about the distance in the males' game. They set the course up still relatively long for the women, but it's like you would imagine any kind of golfer having to play this course. There's a lot more layups. There's a lot longer clubs into the greens. And so watching these girls who, like I said, they're ready to turn professional, a lot of them, play this course and battle it out is amazing.
And some exemptions if you can win it as well. So if you get into the US Women's Open, the Women's British Open, and basically any major amateur event going on around the world. So it's all on her fingertips, Reagan. And I tell you what, I cannot wait to turn on the TV on that, what will probably be early Sunday morning, the week before the Masters, and just take it all in. Hopefully she's in that final 30, and hopefully we get to see her maybe coming down the stretch on those that famous back nine on a Sunday morning, Soph.
100%. Well, you can actually see her play for the Champions for those first 2 days as well. That is also being televised. But it's incredible. The Anwar is just such an amazing event. It's so good to watch the women on that world stage. And a lot of people do actually lock in and listen and watch because everyone gets so excited for the Masters. So it's kind of a good like start to your week before the Masters even goes heads off.
Yeah. Most people know that course back to front. They've mm-hmm. watched it so many times. I mean, I've never been there, but I could describe every hole in a bit of detail. So if the remarkable thing about Anwar, it's only 6 years old, but it's already pushed a women's major away from its previous time slot. So the ANA Inspiration was previously held in this time slot. Anwar said, no, actually, we like that the week before the Masters. And so that's now the Chevron Championship that's been moved to the end of April. So that's how big this event is. It's quite incredible. And it's quite incredible that one of your teammates is going to be playing in it. I'm going to be watching her play at the Asia Pacific Women's Amateur, which is at Royal Wellington, going across for that, Soph. So, maybe a couple of words of encouragement from me of you know, how you can potentially use this form at Royal Wellington and take it to Augusta National. I'm sure she'll be all ears when I open my mouth and give her some advice.
Well, knowing you, after having played golf with you for the past 2 weeks in a row, you'll have some really constructive criticism to give her about where she should be placing her ball and what shots are better to take and what wind she should be looking for to hit balls into. You know, you like a cross breeze, which I've heard is the best breeze to hit an approach shot into.
Wallace, I think it's time. I think we have reached the point where we need to drop this in. I've been feeling that depressed about the amount of criticism, abuse that I received from my co-host, Sophie Hilditch. So I want to share with you a clip. And this is getting a little bit old in the teeth now, but I want to share with you a clip from a podcast called The Shootout, which relates to a sport that you love, hockey. The Hockey One League, good mate of mine, Uncle Orch, had this to say on his podcast about me and my debut performance as the sideline reporter for the Adelaide Fire versus the Canberra Chill. Take a listen to this.
Speaking of handsome men, and this was a massive inclusion today, Ben Hook, pitch side, a.k.a. the firefighter, maybe a late addition to Man Candy Mountain. He was dynamite. I loved him. I thought he was great.
Oh, yeah, what a sugar daddy he could be. No, and thoughts for Dave Webb's sideline commentary career, because Ben's has come in and absolutely nailed it. I think he's got a bit of a podcasting career on all things sport in South Australia, but he came in and was oh so impressive and just added to the great vibe around those games today.
Gee, it makes a difficult selection. We haven't had too many of these, have we, where there's people jostling for pitch side roles? So we'll have to watch and see if there's a laid out or maybe Webby's, who knows, maybe his career's done. We'll see.
maybe.
So there you go, Soph. It was actually very pleasant for someone on a podcast to speak nicely about me, because that never happens here.
Well, honestly, that is the first time I have ever heard that little snippet. And my one and only question, Hookie, is how much did you pay them?
Well, Orch and I have become very, very good friends as a result. I did send him a little private message. You know, that's from the 13th of November, and I've sat on that for a couple of months. I had clean forgotten about it. But as soon as you started torching me over something unreasonable once again, I thought, you know what? I need to perk myself up here. I need a little bit of self-love, a little bit of encouragement, a little bit of support for the bloke who's doing it tough over on this side of the microphone. And there it was. So thank you to the boys at The Shootout, who were very, very kind to me. I have to be honest, I did do one little session of TV. It was like, you know, where you come in absolutely fresh. It was like, a first-time golfer who just steps up to the ball and swings and it goes in the air and it goes straight. Oh, it's unbelievable. How easy is this game? And then thankfully I didn't have to do a second or a third or a fourth or a fifth week, because it would have all gone to completely pear-shaped. But yes, my one little episode of TV has got rave reviews from the boys at The Shootout. I'm very grateful for it. And one day I'll get a rave review from you. Might be 2050 by the time that comes around. But yeah, that was from November last year. So one and done, my probably TV career.
Holding on to it. Look, Hookie, I don't know if you're ever getting sugar daddy coming out of my mouth as praise for you, but you know what? I'm glad someone did. That's exciting for you. You're often behind, none of our listeners can actually see your face. You like being behind a mic or being behind a pen. So look, I'm proud that your first and one and only televised recording, and you got called a sugar daddy.
Yes. I'm glad it was from these guys and not from you, because I would have felt a whole lot more uncomfortable if you were referring to me as a shooting sugar daddy. I can assure you that. Let's move on. We have done more than enough of that. Let's talk about international golf. Scottie Scheffler has done it again at the American Express Championship. So an interesting event played across three courses. It's a pro-am field. Not my favorite format, if I'm being honest, but it doesn't matter what the format is. Scottie Scheffler gets it done. Incredible. Just continuing to dominate on the US tour. Numbers that we haven't seen perhaps since, dare I say it, the great Tiger Woods.
Yeah, he's just incredible, isn't he? He is looking like being our modern version of Tiger Woods under like a field that is completely strong as well. There's so many players that could win these events, but Scottie Scheffler always seems to rise to the top. He's unbelievable. It was an absolute birdie fest, and it's the first time he's ever played this event and played these courses.
I've got a couple of stats here, Soph. This came from Jeff Shackelford. He's the 40th player to reach 20 wins, and he moves into tie for 36th on the all-time wins list. He's the first player to reach 20 wins since someone you know, Rory McIlroy, who earned his 20th win at the 2021 CJ Cup in South Carolina. He's the first player since Tiger Woods to earn 20 PGA Tour wins under the age of 30. Woods's 20th win came at the 2000 US Open, where he's 24 years, 5 months, 19 days, so a lot younger. Mark's the second fewer starts to reach 20 wins. Scheffler's had 151. Tiger did it in 95. And we have a 1,442-day span between Scheffler's first win, which was the 2022 Waste Management Phoenix Open, and his 20th win, which, of course, was this morning. Second fastest to do that, behind Tiger, who was 1,351 days. So that was Jeff Shackelford. Justin Ray said that there are only three people in history to have won 20-plus times on the PGA Tour and four or more majors before the age of 30. Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, and Scotty Scheffler. That's pretty incredible company. And probably the best one of the lot was came from Monday Q Info. I can't think of his name, but very good on the sort of the inside stories of professional golf. Ted Scott, this is Scotty Scheffler's caddy, is going to be able to use his top 50 in all-time money next season and have full status. So that's how much winning Scotty Scheffler has done, is that Ted Scott, the caddy, would be top 50 in career earnings on the US Tour. That is something pretty incredible, isn't it?
Oh, that's completely incredible. But do you remember when Tiger Woods was like the leading amateur in his, the leading career earner, and then the second to him was his caddy?
Yeah, that's right. I think Steve Williams, who was the caddy for Tiger Woods, I think 10 years running, he was the highest paid sportsman out of New Zealand and was actually New Zealand Sport Person of the Year one year as Tiger Woods' caddy.
Yeah, just incredible. But look, having Scotty Scheffler's name up next to Tiger Woods, it's insane. I actually kind of wish he'd go back to the blade putter, because as soon as he switched to the mallet, he's basically unbeatable.
Yeah. One thing that's interesting about this tournament, it normally the week before the championship series matches in the NFL, this tournament goes Wednesday to Saturday. It went Thursday to Sunday. It's a tournament that looks like it might be on its last leg. So Pro-Am formats, I think, are going to be a thing of the past soon enough. Three different courses is unusual for a US tournament. But to play this up against Championship Sunday, the two matches before the Super Bowl, would suggest to me that they're almost looking for a way to kill this thing off, because it was certainly in the US market largely a bit of an afterthought.
Yeah, well, I didn't actually see the viewing numbers, but I remember it used to be Wednesday to Saturday. I don't think they'd be able to compete. I mean, my partner Darcy had the lads over watching the NFL from Australia. I just don't, and they had no interest in the PGA leaderboard or what was going on there, particularly because it is a birdie fest. I just don't think people are that interested in seeing people shoot the lights out. Like, I think Scotty ended up with 27 under.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they were 10 under after day one. Minwoo Lee was the early leader. He finished on 16 under, so he really didn't get it done days two, three, and four. But, I mean, part of the problem here is that it is under pro-am conditions, so you can't afford to have a really brutally difficult golf course, because you're going to have the amateurs take 6 hours to get around the course. So it is set up fairly easy, and you can make the argument that as an early tournament in the PGA Tour, it's probably reasonable to make it a little bit more amenable and relaxed and friendly. But yeah, this is a bit too much, Soph, and yeah, I find it pretty underwhelming, in particular when you compare it to what we saw at the Dubai Desert Classic. Great tournament, wonderful finish down the stretch. Patrick Reed was absolutely sensational, but that course was set up really tough. Greens were firm, was rolling out. The rough was pretty lush, and if you missed a fairway, it was very, very difficult to make par from there, and the scores certainly demonstrated that. So Reed was, 14 under, 1 by 4, an incredible performance, and he has sort of opened the door to the possibility that he's not absolutely set to be playing LIV next year. What did you make of that?
Yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it? He said something along the lines of he's still negotiating his leave contract and didn't really want to comment on it and kind of pushed the media to the side saying, when I'm playing, I don't want to be talking about business. But it did really open it up to the question. He's obviously the 2018 Masters winner, so he always gets an invite back to Augusta to play the Masters. But I don't know if the PGA would want Patrick Reed back. It's an interesting one because part of me kind of likes Patrick Reed. I quite like having a bit of a villain. I don't know if our listeners will remember, but Patrick Reed's been caught cheating. And when you see him playing in the Ryder Cup, he blamed Tiger Woods, his playing partner. He was the reason that he lost. So he's a bit of a controversial character. He speaks openly. Part of me kind of likes having him in the mix in the PGA again because he does play that role and it's quite interesting from a media point of view.
Yeah, look, I think your point's really well made, but this is why he's not going back to the PGA Tour is Tiger Woods won't want him there. Tiger Woods will still feel jilted about what happened with the Ryder Cup. And I think you also need to remember as well that it was Patrick Reed more than anyone else who was throwing all sorts of lawsuits against golf media, and even subpoenaing Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy and Jay Monahan in all of this. So I'd be stunned if he gets the same sort of offer as Brooks Koepka has done and what they've essentially offered to Cameron Smith, Bryson DeChambeau and John Rahm as well. I don't think that bridge is going to get mended that easily. I kind of agree with you. I would like to have him on the tour because you need a pantomime villain, don't you? And that's what he's played so perfectly all the way throughout his career. We didn't really know much about him until, well, it was probably just before he won the Masters. Do you remember when he won a tournament? I can't recall what it was. And he was probably ranked about 20, 25 in the world and declared that he declared himself a top five player in the world at that particular point in time. And that was the moment where we thought, okay, this is the sort of guy that we're going to love to hate. And it's just been unfortunate that we haven't, we don't realize how much we miss those guys until they're gone. Bryson DeChambeau was largely the same. He was one of those, as it was described on Seinfeld about Kramer, a loathsome, offensive brute, but I cannot look away. And that's how I feel about both of those guys. As much as I find them uncomfortable to see have success, at the same time, I love watching them. And I even love watching Reed last night. He was superb. His short game is just divine. He's not the longest player out there, but he's a really pure player, has the capacity to move the ball both ways. So we see on tour these days, if you basically they all just hit it left to right and that's it. But Reed can play right to left if he needs to. That's a course that does require a lot of right to left ball movement. It certainly suits that ball shape, and he played that to perfection. And if he misses a green, he's almost certainly getting it up and down because his short game is exemplary.
Well, it's the reason he won the Masters. It's all because of his short game. His chipping is unbelievable. But I also loved listening to his press conference at the end. He was very open. His front nine wasn't that brilliant. He started after 54 holes, he had a four-shot lead. And then by the time we got to the turn, so after nine holes, that had been broken in half. And he said openly, I was playing too defensive and trying to defend this lead. And it was my caddy who turned to me and said, no, you've got to go win this. You can't be defensive. And that's when he really turned on and went to birdie some of those first few holes, I think two of those first few holes of the back nine. So I do love listening to him because he is so open. He is so emotional. I agree with you. I don't think the PGA will want him back because he's burnt way too many bridges with too many powerful people within the PGA. But from as a spectator, like I remember when he improved his lie in the bunker and then the President's Cup at Royal Melbourne followed and we had Australian spectators having shovels in their hands watching him play. And I mean, it just, people do love a player to root against and he was one of those people. And Bryson, you're exactly right. I think I'm going to get the quote wrong, but I remember Bryson saying Augusta played like a 59, par 59 or something
par
like
68.
That. Par 68. Par 68, there we go.
67, I think it was, because all of the par fives were par fours and the third was a par three. He described it as a par 67 and then it kept kicking his ass.
Yeah, exactly. And this was when he was going for his longest drive debacle and competing on that. So those kind of players I love because they do spark a bit of interest in some spectators. It gives you someone to root against as well as someone to root for. But I agree with you. I don't think the PGA will want him back. He does look like he's giving a little bit of a, you know, waving the white flag saying, please have me.
Yeah. One thing I will give credit to Patrick Reed about, he plays 14 events on LIV. He played 32 events all up last year. Compared that to a guy like Taylor Gooch, who basically refuses to turn up to anything he doesn't get an express invite into. So 18 tournaments that he played that were either majors or DP World Tour or Asian Tour, and that's allowed him to maintain a really high ranking. So he would have got into the Masters anyway right now. He's 44 ranked, and I think he'll pick up more rankings points as he goes along if he continues to play a few more DP World Tour events, which obviously he's going to get into now. So he's projected to be in the 30s. He'll get into every major this year, which is pretty incredible when you consider where a lot of the live player rankings have fallen. So the fact that he's stuck at it, prepared to pay his fines, he's paid his fines for the year by winning this tournament in Dubai. I think $1.5 million they were saying US is what he's got to pay in fines, and that's a bit under what he won. So yeah, he's certainly not my favorite player, but he is one of the guys I do love to watch, and I have to concede full credit to him for what he's done while playing on live and being able to maintain a pretty high world ranking. And the other thing, Soph, he's a real threat at the Masters. He plays that course very well. As I said, he has an ability to move the ball right to left. And you think about the way you've got to get around that course, in particular on the back nine, you need to be able to move the ball right to left to be successful. And that's part of the reason why he has been such a threat and right in amongst it late on Sunday, more than just his 2018 win. Let's get on to some golf a little bit closer to home. Jordan Doole has won the WebEx Victoria. It was played on the composite course at Rosebud. First of all, Soph, have you played Rosebud?
I haven't actually played Rosebud.
That's unusual. I thought that would have been a track you would have graced in your time. Jordan Doole got it done over Cameron John in an absolute thrilling playoff that went right down to the wire. I think Doole made a really tough birdie putt from about 2 meters away, and Cameron John missed one from just inside, and that was the end of the playoff. So well done to Cameron John, who comes off the win at the Vic Open last week and a win at the Queensland PGA a little bit earlier in the year. So he set himself up beautifully. But Jordan Doole, what an incredible performance. The partner of Catherine Norris. So she was caddying for him this week after he caddied for her when she went deep in the Vic Open last week. So that's a cool little story.
Yeah, it is a cool little story. I watched the full playoff of this. I liked it. Jordan Doole off the 18th tee was laying up. He had about 150 metres into that green, and Cameron John was taking out the medal, and he had about 108 metres into that green. Jordan Doole put it to, like you said, about 2 metres, and Cameron John hit a fabulous shot to, I want to say, only about 4 feet. When Jordan holed his putt for birdie on that fourth playoff, Catherine Norris rolled her eyes as if to be like, I want to go get dinner. Can you please stop?
Here we go again.
Here we go again. And it was the most reluctant fist pump I've ever seen in my life until Cameron John missed his part. And then, you know, the emotions overcome her and there was hugs and there was kisses and everything. But it was the most girlfriend response I've ever seen, as if to be like, you've got to be kidding me. I am going again.
I am checked out. I've carried this bag for 18 plus 4 extras. I don't want to be heading back for a fifth time. Thank goodness this is over one way or another.
Yeah, it's 100% the reaction.
Hey, what do you make of it? That's the 23rd WebEx Series event we've had. So this is men and women playing for the same prize. They play from, generally the women play one tee block up from the men. I mean, that's basically how it's been. But in 23 events now, we've only seen 3 women win. It's probably about a third of the field women. So you'd expect around about a third of the trophies going to the women. But what are we? We're 1 in 8, aren't we? Which I would probably contend is a bit light. What do you think? I mean, there aren't many other playing opportunities for the women at this time of year, but is it too skewed for the men?
Well, we were having this rant only last week about the Vic Open and how it was set up for the men and the women. And I made the point and I stand by it. I don't think you can set up a course to suit both the women and the men. It's too difficult. You'd have to push the women too far up. These courses aren't long enough. Like, the boys were having gap wedges into 18 if they took out the driver, whilst the girls were, you know, hitting 8 irons in. It's too different. It's too hard. But what I will say, and it's the point that you made, if the WebEx series doesn't exist our Australian women, who a lot of them are starting their professional careers. It's the first tour that they get on before they often go off and play Let Access or the Epson over in the US. It's a time for them to get experience playing professional golf, playing for money. And I will say, yes, you do make a great point. We've only had three winners. But, I mean, if you look at the WA WebEx, which was played 2 weeks earlier, Abby Teasdale and Kristen Rudgley finished, what, T2? So it's not like they're not being competitive at all in these events. Yep. They might not be winning them, but they are still making cuts and being competitive. This, unfortunately for Rosebud, I did notice that a lot of women did miss the cut in this particular event. So maybe this course was set up a bit too favourable for the men. But generally, like when you go and see the Willunga WebEx, generally the women are still making the cut and still competing at a high level. Like Catherine Norris, Jordan Dahl, only last year competed really well at the Willunga WebEx series. I think she finished T3 or T2 to our own Jack Buchanan. So I don't think the women aren't competing in these events. I agree they're not winning as many as I would like to see them winning. But we look at people like Cassie Porter, who's now an LPGA event, LPGA player. She started playing the WebEx series. We look at our lead amateurs. Jazzy Roberts was in this field. She made the cut. She actually had an albatross on the par 5 7th hole with a 6-iron. So she's playing well. She's getting experience. I feel like it is a real nurturing ground for our women, and I don't want them to stop doing it. I think it is necessary. And I agree with you, maybe it is a bit skewed, but I don't think you'll ever find that you can set up a course to favour both women and men. If they do, I'll fall on my sword, but I just think it is a very difficult task.
Well said. Good on you, Soph. Cannot argue with that opinion. Amongst the South Australians, Lockie Barker was at 9-under in a tie for 8th. Adam Bland. So both of these guys have been excellent all the way through the year. Adam Bland was in a tie for 26th at 4-under. And then the other South Australian of note was Caitlin Pearce, who I'm pretty sure I saw her name not so long ago and I seem to have lost it somehow. There she is, in a tie for 31st at 3-under as well. So I think she was in a tie for 4th amongst the women, tie for 31st overall. Crystal Blum played in this event as well. She didn't make the weekend, as did Jack Thompson, but he didn't have a bad week after all. He went down and played the National with a couple of mates. It looked like he's had a hole-in-one there on Saturday, Soph. So not all bad for Jack Thompson, despite missing the cut.
Nope, not all bad. And you'll notice, unfortunately, Reagan Denton, well, not unfortunately, but was missing from this field, but she was overplaying the Avondale Amateur, and she's had another great result at finishing third.
Yeah, well said, Soph. Yeah, we've talked about Reagan, of course, so that's another event from her. We'll be very keen to see on Wednesday when the World Amateur Golf Rankings come out, because with that third, she's currently 44th. She may well be inside the top 40 by the time the next lot of results come out with that that third place finish at Avondale. There's not a lot going on in American golf at the moment, so all of the results up there are pretty stagnant. All of the numbers there are pretty stagnant. She's an opportunity to continue to chip away at that top 40 and ultimately top 30. Hey, just a couple of things going around. So if it's been 45 degrees today, you can imagine how hot it was east of Gawler. The Sandy Creek Volunteers turned up in force at that golf club to water it, aerate it, you name it, in that weather to keep it damp and just so they don't lose it, I suppose. So I just wanted to give a bit of a shout out to the Sandy Creek members. That's a course that we're yet to talk about, and I'd love to review with you at some point. But I spent all of the day in air conditioning today, so I can't imagine going out and watering golf greens. And there was a guy on an aerator there, just coring the greens, just making sure that they survived. That's an incredible achievement by those Sandy Creek members. So well done to them.
Yeah, it's a great golf course, but it is volunteer run. So I've got to admit, like I said, I was lying on my couch all day under the air conditioner. I was definitely not assisting on our golf course that we play out regularly, nor would I ever put my hand up to do it. So hats off to them, because it's people like those that keep these country courses looking great.
Yeah, your course told you to stay away, didn't they? Shut the gates. You're only allowed in if you were going to buy a pint of Coke over the bar. So if one other that caught my eye, the Mount Lofty Golf Course celebrated its 100th birthday last weekend. So it turns 100 this year. They had a Saturday afternoon teams golf event and then a dinner that went into the evening. It's had some challenges over the last two decades. The Mount Lofty Golf Club really seems like it's found a bit of a niche up there in the hills now. So I just wanted to congratulate Mount Lofty, a course that we should go up and review at some point. I can't imagine you've had the opportunity to play that too often because they've been a bit of a stronghold in men's pennant golf, but I don't reckon they've spent a lot of time in women's pennant golf, certainly at the level that you play. So congratulations to Mount Lofty on 100 years.
Yeah, happy birthday to Mount Lofty. That's huge. I have played up there, but you're dead right. I haven't played a pennant match up at Mount Lofty.
Yeah, there's a few centenaries going on. Grange is 100 this year. Glenelg turns 100 next year, Soph. So there's plenty of parties going on all around us.
Yeah, South Australian golf just must have been booming 100 years ago. Later on in the year, I've got the Cudmore Cup, which is the 100th anniversary for it. It's an event for women, Kionga versus Royal Adelaide. So SA Golf, they must have just been building golf courses and playing golf 100 years ago.
So if your point's well made, because I reckon it was pretty much right on 100 years ago that Alistair McKenzie turned up here in Adelaide to rework the Royal Adelaide golf course. Now, that had been well and truly kicking around Royal Adelaide by that stage. In fact, they turned 125 in 2017. So they're heading towards their 135th birthday. But in the mid-1920s, Alistair McKenzie was here in South Australia looking in particular at Royal Adelaide. And it's no surprise that we saw a lot of other golf courses bob up in and around that era. Golf would have been exceedingly popular in that particular point in time. And the great Alistair McKenzie was here. He did Royal Melbourne as well, of course. And, you know, his fingerprints on those courses stretch out to the way other people started to design courses in and around South Australia as well. And so, yeah, no surprise to me that Grange in 1926, Kooyonga in 1925, I think it was, and then Glenelg in 1927 have all just bobbed up one after the other after the other, which is sort of almost clear. It's clearly on the back of the Alistair McKenzie visit. Talking about Glenelg, Soph, our big Glenelg reveal is going to drop at the end of the week. We played it again for a second time. You, myself, Wallace, and a good mate of mine, Adam Haygreen. Bit of fun to play with your own ball this time around rather than having to hit a beautiful drive and then have to go backwards and go to mine because I've overruled you once again.
Yeah, 100%. The sugar daddy overrided the decisions of the captain, that he actually elected her to be captain on the first tee and then completely overrided her decisions. No, I love playing Glenelg. I actually found it quite funny when I rocked up. Shane from the pro shop told me that they did have memberships and I could play pennant for them instead if I wanted to. So had a few giggles with some of the Glenelg members, but I loved it. I love playing my own ball. I missed some opportunities on that front nine, and then the back nine just – every single time I played the hole, realised I'd played it completely wrong and wanted a redo. I told you, we're walking down the 18th fairway. It's the first thing that I said to you. I want to go back out and do it again.
Exactly right. There were so many times when I made a mistake off the tee or on approach. And sometimes you get off a course like that and it was hot on Friday and you think to yourself, oh, geez, I'm tired. I've had enough. I just want to go and sit up in the bar and have something cold to drink and something to eat. But yeah, I was exactly the same as you. I thought to myself, gee, I made a mistake with the drive on four. I made a mistake with the drive on five. I made a mistake with the drive on 17. I really want to go out there and start to think, right, where would I hit it if I got another opportunity? So I think that's the beauty of a really good course, and it is a really good course. It's going to be interesting to see how it's received by the members and visitors and guests and all the course raters that we caught up with there over the course of the day on Friday as well. But our reveal, our hole-by-hole reveal with Rob Vincikovic, we've got conversations with Neil Crafter, the course designer. Plenty to get us through the end of the week, Soph. So hopefully everyone enjoys that when it does finally drop later in the week.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one dropping because we've had two amazing rounds. But just before we sign off, mistake on the fourth tee block. You almost put it in the houses across the fence. A lady got donated a free ball. I got to watch her walk past, look at a golf ball, point at a partner and say, oh, look, there's a golf ball there, and pick it up and keep walking.
For those who know Glenelg, it's quite the achievement to drive it out of bounds over the fifth fairway, which I somehow managed to do. Yeah, got my alignment probably a little bit wrong, paid the penalty with having to take three off the tee. But What an experience. It'll all drop in a couple of days. So always great to chat golf with you, mate.
Yeah, always good fun, Hooky. Can't wait for the drop of the Glenel podcast, but speak to you next week.
Certainly will.
With the last putt sunk, that's a wrap on this golf edition of Hooked on Sport. Thanks for listening. Help us meet more golfers just like you by following us and leaving a review. We look forward to your company on the next golf edition of Hooked on Sport.